That H&M, like their conscious line or whatever.
Oh,
That is
I
the
re
epitome
oh,
of
the
greenwashing.
poster child.
Did you see the Netflix episode of Patriot Act where they talked about fast fashion and they talked about H&M sustainability line? Okay. Ho, it's
I
like
jotted
such an
it
old
down
episode.
to bring up in this. It's so good.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Sierra Youth's podcast episode. We are talking about greenwashing 101. What is it? What does it look like? How can we combat it? Who should the responsibility fall on to even navigate such a thing? We actually did something different this week where we posted on our Instagram and we asked our audience what kind of topics you wanted to learn about, and greenwashing had a lot of likes in our comments, so here we are. I think we'll keep on doing this because we love suggestions, so yeah, please feel free to comment on our Instagram and let us know what topics you want us to help demystify. We start everything off today with Jess, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
So welcome to Intro to Greenwashing. Before we begin, I'll just give a quick definition of what greenwashing is. And I liked the one that I found from Blair Amani best. She describes greenwashing as when brands lie or otherwise misrepresent themselves to seem environmentally friendly, sustainable, or eco-conscious. Greenwashing obviously encompasses like green aspects of things and green considerations. So everything about the environment, but one major missing factor is how people are treated throughout this process. So whether people are paid fairly for their work, and the actual like impact of the product. And I think that's like a huge missing piece of this that people, maybe it's just not what's trending for like marketing and things like that. But that stuck out to me.
I think another area that I thought about it, which is new for me, is it can be greenwashing in government policies. So I think greenwashing can also happen in terms of government action to maybe make the public feel better that their needs are being heard, but it's actually not done in a way where it amounts to anything significant.
Yeah, I think that that's actually super pervasive in government policy. Which is definitely like a specific subset of greenwashing. But for instance, when you think about the marine protection goals in Canada, like the Liberal government, for instance, committed to protecting like something like 30% of marine areas as MPAs by 2030. And they've already made a lot of progress towards that goal. But a lot of those areas are not like biologically significant or like even high traffic areas. Like they're really kind of plucking that low-hanging fruit, but in not a meaningful way. Like it's just a way to, I feel like, boost their statistics and sound better without actually doing anything meaningful for environmental conservation. And you wouldn't know that because you just see 30% marine protected areas and you're like, damn, that's amazing. I love that.
I think that like following alternative news sources such as like conservation groups and whatnot that are like actually like doing the boots on the ground kind of work has been like something that has really brought my attention to a lot of those kind of policies that are lacking and are greenwashing per se. And I think that those kinds of organizations, like that's why they exist, right? They exist to like basically challenge the status quo.
The narwhal, for instance, does a lot of reporting on like old growth and different environmental impacts in, I'd say, the West in general. And like the Tai is a really great resource. Like there's definitely a lot of really good environmental journalism out there that I think really, really does the work to dig into those statistics. So I would definitely agree with Emily there.
But like also, I think that you should like be able to trust, like when you read that like 30% protected area, like you should be able to like think like, oh yeah, like that's 30% equally spread out, like not 30% concentrated in like these areas that already didn't have much going on in them in general.
I really agree. This is kind of a pivot, but one of the things I wanted to bring up was actually the fact that greenwashing is regulated in Canada, like by the Competition Bureau. So that's like misleading your consumers and and like claiming sustainability and all these things, like that is regulated by the Competition Bureau and punishable, like by fine, I believe. But the framework that they've set out is just so vague, and it's on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, terms like sustainability have never been defined like in a legal context. And so that really does put the onus like on the consumer and on the individual to figure out what someone or a corporation means by sustainable or eco-friendly or green. And that onus shouldn't be on consumers. Like, as per usual, it's a systemic issue that really should be regulated and should be the responsibility of the government. But like, here we are again being like, how do we figure out every single thing, and how do we defend ourselves and our planet against all of these threats, which is kind of upsetting.
It's also so tricky for that regulation, because just the vast amount of marketing and advertisements and everything that would need to be screened, I guess. It's definitely a very reactive process of, okay, a commercial went out, it was then reviewed, and it was found to be misleading, but it's already been circulated at that point. People have already been, have already seen it and been influenced by it. I think moving to a more like proactive system would do a lot of good. I was reading some papers that said that the ultimate solution is just full transparency. Companies should be saying, and this is particularly true for fashion, where a lot of fashion companies say, we saved this many gallons of water, or this is how many trees we're planting, or whatever their claim may be. But the bottom line is that the best product is not buying anything.
I'm really glad you mentioned fashion, because I know Michaela is heavily immersed in fashion and ethical fashion and greenwashing. So yeah, Michaela, do you have anything to add to that?
I love that little segue. Thanks, Brenna. Yeah, Jess, I just wanted to comment on what you said, because I was actually going to jump in and say like basically exactly what you just said, which is like true sustainability would see like the decrease in production on a massive and like global scale. And like, even though like for the, in the case of fashion, like sustainable fashion companies are like using organic cotton and paying their workers properly and like doing things like that, regardless, like they're still producing at a massive scale. And so that's not sustainable. And so I also think like the conversation around greenwashing also has to center around like consumerism and like shifting societal and like cultural norms around like how much we consume as a society. But yeah, as Britta said, like I'm pretty deeply ingrained into the fashion industry right now, because I, going back to like the Women's International Women's Day episode, I got the job that I had interviewed for, that I was so excited about. And so I'm the innovation story map coordinator at Threading Change, and I'm super excited about that, which is an ethical fashion organization. And if I'm totally honest, you know, I've been in a bit of an ethical dilemma lately, because, you know, it's my job to basically profile these ethical and sustainable brands and create this story map, which is going to be like a global directory for sustainable and ethical brands globally. And it's an amazing initiative, and it's going to be, you know, like a huge step forward within the fashion industry. But I also struggle because, like, regardless of the fact that I'm like sharing these amazing practices and sharing the amazing stories of all these brands, they're still producing at a massive scale. Like, they're still exploiting the environment in some way or another. They're still exploiting workers in some way or another. And so it still sort of like bothers me deep down a little bit. Yeah. And I guess that's just something that I have to like work through myself, because like, this is just capitalism. This is just how we operate as a society.
I think what you're showing is like a deep need to innovate beyond consumerism to be able to fuel our economy, because I have a lot of friends that don't work in the climate sphere. They don't work in green spaces, and greenwashing is something that impacts all of us because it validates your consumer behavior, but it makes you feel better about yourself because you don't think that you're doing anything badly. However, what's really damaging, I think, is this idea that like you can have your cake and eat it too. Like, the root problem is like we come up with these more sustainable quote unquote alternatives, and it's using like earth-friendly materials. But at the end of the day, like, your values and your behavior towards consumerism have not changed. And that is like a big issue in this whole conversation. And, you know, I think the biggest issue we have with people is like, the free world. You want to be able to do whatever you want if you have the money to do so. You want to buy this because you're allowed to. Like, you're free to do that and make your own choices. And all of a sudden you're getting messages or you're getting told like, no, you actually can't do that because your actions have ramifications for people, for workers, for the environment. And so it's like this really awkward teeter-totter where, you know, our values and actions towards the environment and purchasing products and goods and services is not sustainable or ethical. And you're going to have to change that if you really want to see a positive impact. But at the same time, we have so many systemic issues where workers need jobs. So all of those supply chain workers in the, like maybe like those fast fashion and fashion organizations, how are they supposed to make money if people aren't buying their product?
I was listening to a really interesting podcast today on how to save a planet. the recycling episode. Have you guys listened to that one? It's really good. And like, I honestly, like, I was kind of like trying to do a little bit of background research for this episode. And like, I feel like recycling is like the OG greenwashing. and I think that like, it's interesting because it's like recycling, like most times when we're recycling something, it's for recycling, like not a product itself, but something that a product was wrapped in. So it's like just like kind of like a byproduct of our consumerism, but like yet it's taken up so much space in like the environmental world.
Yeah, I think that episode was so crazy, and just a super not fun fact for everyone to hear is when they talk about how like 7% of materials that are recycled are like actually recycled. In terms of greenwashing, it's also this weird thing where now we're moving towards all of these like compostable materials and like these things that you should be able to deal with. And, you know, that might be true. Like in theory, this thing is compostable, but then you have this added complexity where like a lot of municipal like garbage systems are not capable of composting that thing. So it doesn't matter if that's possible because they can't do it. So at the end of the day, that's still ending up in a landfill or like in our oceans. Yeah, I guess that just like brings me back to this whole systemic issue, which we've been talking about this whole time, which is like consumerism number one. And how that's so pervasive, even when we think that, you know, we're able to recycle or whatever we're doing is not greenwashed.
I totally share your frustrations, Jackie, and I feel the same way within the context of fashion, because there's just so much clothing circulating like throughout the fashion supply chain, and it frustrates me the way that the way that companies and corporations continue to produce on such a massive scale when like we could build an infrastructure to be able to like reuse the garments that have already been produced to turn them into something else. And like that's why I love initiatives like the Renewal Workshop, because they're like taking leftover outdoor gear from like Patagonia and Prana in the North Face, and they're repairing it, and then they're like reselling it like under the same brand name but also under the Renewal Workshop brand as well too. And I just want to see more like initiatives like that organization, and I just want to see better infrastructure even within cities to be able to like recycle clothing properly. Because even when people think that they're sending their clothing to Value Village and that it's going to go to a good home, like the majority of it gets packaged up and sent back overseas where it was originally produced to sit in landfills and like pollute, you know, other countries. And it's just such a frustrating system. And I sometimes just feel a little hopeless, to be honest.
No, I think you bring up a great point. And I think sometimes when I'm driving, I like think about what economies we can have that will positively impact the situation. And what I specifically mean by that is like, we talk a lot about the circular economy and we talk about the sharing economy, but like, what does that mean? And at the moment, in my eyes, the sharing economy does not have that much value, because this concept of like trusting your neighbor does not really fly. There's just so many people, there's so much polarization that obviously like way back in the day when community sizes were a lot smaller, it was all about reciprocity and about like helping each other out, and sharing wasn't seen as maybe like dirty or untrustworthy. And so it was obviously probably easier to do those things. Whereas now we're almost going into this turning point where we don't really have an option but to start a sharing economy. but we're going to have to navigate all of these apprehensions about going into something like that and also finding ways to monetize that, because people need jobs and we need to create revenue from it as well. So like, do you get a subscription to like a rental app where you can rent cars or clothes or whatever that looks like? And that just needs to start becoming more widely adopted. And it's this notion of like, those that have too much have less, and then you share with those that have too little. And then I also think, to touch a little bit on corporate greenwashing, I feel like corporate greenwashing can have different definitions. One is when like a company outright knows that it's not protecting the environment, but they say that they are. And then another aspect of greenwashing is when they maybe are trying to become, you know, more sustainable or eco-friendly, but it's so insignificant that it's very performative.
Yeah. So I have a few examples. And like you said, there's different ways of greenwashing presenting itself. So there can be misleading claims where there's claims to be green based on a single environmental attribute. And it's generally very vague and hard to define. There's also truthful but unimportant claims. So if you see anybody saying this is CFC free, when in fact CFCs have been outlawed since the late 1980s, or there's truthful claims that distract you from the bigger environmental impacts, such as organic tobacco or green insecticides. There was one really interesting example I found of Windex vinegar ocean plastic bottle. They claim to be the first window cleaner bottle made from 100% recycled ocean plastic. First of all, it's not even true. It's sourced from plastic banks internationally that's collected from land and would otherwise have leaked into the ocean. So this is also called ocean-bound plastic. And fun fact, if you ever see a company that says recycled ocean plastic, it's actually impossible to recycle plastic pulled directly from the ocean, because at that point it's been degraded by the salt water and the sun. So ultimately not true and misleading. There's a bunch of other examples as well. A really famous one recently was Shell asking on their Twitter page, what are you willing to change to help reduce emissions? Which is placing the responsibility on the consumer and is obviously they're just a laughing stock. But AOC posted that or responded to that and really highlighted how that's shifting responsibility and making it seem as though they care about the environment. In all my reading, I kind of just realized that a really great first question when you see things like this is asking yourself, would this company benefit from a sustainable and equitable future? So would Shell ever benefit from us moving towards more environmental avenues and seeing this movement progress? And absolutely not. They've not a chance. So I kind of use that as like a guiding principle to start for determining whether something felt like greenwashing.
Yeah, I think after that, the next step for me always when I'm like questioning a brand or like a company or corporation's practices is just like to go directly to their website and look and see if they have like a header on their website that says like sustainability or like core values. And like one of the things that I look for is like sustainability actually within their core values, not just as like a marketing scheme for them, but like, do they actually care about sustainability at the heart of their business? If people listening want a place to find like sustainable and ethical like fashion brands to buy from or organizations to support, come and look at our story map on threadingchange.org, because that will definitely be a place to find fashion brands that are like actually ethical and sustainable to buy from if you're looking to buy something new. And another thing too is like I always look for like third-party certification. So like if it's like B Corp certified or fair trade, because those are like third parties that have actually like verified these companies' practices. Those are just some things that I would recommend as like next steps.
I think to add on to that, if you can rent it, borrow it, or trade it, try that first. Like whenever you're just going to purchase something, maybe first of all, think, do you really need this? Like, is this a necessity or is this just something that you want? That's like step A. And then B, try and leverage like your friends, your family, your immediate community. Try and see if there are like groups on Facebook around you. And once you start participating more in those communities, I feel like over time you will gain more momentum in those spaces. So just trying to navigate that first. And then if you absolutely can't find it anywhere, then do the research and find out which product, service, whatever you can find that has that core value of being sustainably focused, I think is a really great place to start as well.
Yeah, I also just wanted to add another great strategy, I think, is to like tell a friend what you've learned about greenwashing, like call it out when you see it. And if you're feeling ambitious, and I promise this won't take that much time, like maybe shoot an email to your city councilor or MP and say that you want to see like this sort of transformational change, because at the end of the day, we don't need to be doing all this research. Like, I think in the short term, it's amazing that we're all doing all the things that we can in our everyday life to, you know, reduce our own impact. But in the long term, like, we really need that transformational change. And that's only going to come through policy.
In general, in my life, I try to like, just be very conscious when I'm consuming for like, financial, environmental, personal reasons. And like, I think also at the end of the day, if you need to, like, if you need something, like, and you like, don't have the privilege to like, take the time to do all this research and like, find something that will probably be more expensive if it's sustainable, because that's just unfortunately the way the world works. And like, go buy that thing, because like, if you need it, if you truly, truly need it, go buy it.
Yeah, you bring up a good point that the responsibility will look different for your circumstance and your lived situation, whether you're a marginalized community member, whether you're in a low socioeconomic status. Like, you're not going to have a large responsibility to contribute to like navigating greenwashing. That's unfair. So for those that do have the capacity, being able to, yeah, take on a little bit of extra responsibility, because at the end of the day, shouldn't we all be like that?
Like, preach.
It's like that H&M, like their conscious line or whatever.
Oh, that is the epitome of greenwashing.
The poster child.
Did you see the Netflix episode of Patriot Act where they talked about fast fashion and they talked about H&M sustainability line? Okay.
It's like such an old episode. I jotted it down to bring up in this. It's so good. You guys have to watch it.
Yeah, is that on Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's with Hasan Minhaj, and he does like this. I don't want to spoil it. So he just does like a little kind of like lab where he has all these people come into kind of like the sustainable shop of H&M and all their clothes. And he's like, oh, look at this. Like, these are all of the sustainability lines. And you actually look at the tag, and this dress, completely branded as like eco-friendly, sustainable, whatever, has like 2% recycled polyester. And that was the only sustainable. Oh, it was like the fact that the tag of the dress was made out of recycled polyester and the rest of the dress was normal. And
that can't
be
real.
There is no regulation, like Jackie said. So you can say that it's a recycled dress because the tag is recycled. It's the same as organics, like back in the day, you know, with food regulations and how lax they are.
Yeah.
That sounds like a comedy sketch. Yeah. Like, that can't. It's so sad.
Obviously, it's always best to not buy something if you don't need it. But at the same time, I think people can have adverse reactions to these sorts of conversations because they're like, oh, do you just want me to like never buy anything again? Like, okay, that sucks because I want to buy this thing. And I think that's fair. Like, people don't need to consume zero amount. It's just that it's too much. So if you want to like treat yourself to a cute, ethically sourced, sustainable dress, I think that's okay every once in a while, because those things do exist and sustainability is a spectrum. And, you know, you can definitely find like something that's nice and not terrible for the environment. So it's not to say that you can never, ever have anything nice again. It's just like, do your best. And we're all in this together.
And chances are it'll probably last longer than like something you buy from like a shitty company too.
It's about progress, not perfection. Wink.
Yes.
I was remembering when Jackie was like, I'm going to a wedding and I bought my dress off of Poshmark. And everyone was like, yes, like secondhand clothes. But I was thinking about it today. Like, my friends are going to start getting married, which is just weird. But part of like what's exciting about weddings is buying like a dress or like having a nice dress to wear to these events. And I think you brought up a good point where you don't
want to just negate all those things. It's just like when you do want to have that special occasion or like that's an important thing, then increase that emotional attachment to whatever you're purchasing and just make sure that it's something you think is really special and that you really care about. And then you're more likely to not throw it out.
Side note, fully recommend renting for weddings because I got a bomb dress that like way more fancy than anything I would ever wear again. And I felt amazing. And then I just gave it back.
Okay. Where did you rent it from?
Fitzroy Rentals in Toronto. And it literally, they mailed it to me. So I got it the day before. And then maybe you have like a couple tequila shots at the wedding and you don't want to like trek out to this shop. You just put it outside the door and they come pick it up. Yeah.
I feel like
just a couple.
There needs to be something like that, but where it's like mailed across Canada because just like rural towns don't. Yeah. We lack our like some amenities around here for sure.
Yeah. Like making, like Michaela was saying, like making all of this easier because it is frustrating. I feel like I talked to you guys about like the laptop thing too. Like I want to get refurbished, but then I can't get the same, like I can't trade in my old one. You can't recycle it for like a trade-in value. So it's actually more expensive. Things like that are like so frustrating.
Oh my God. I'm obsessed with Fitzroy Rentals. Like you can get designer dresses for like $120.
Yeah. It cost me $125 including like mailing it back and having it mailed to me.
See, it's exciting to rent.
So fun.
That's what the Japanese do. They usually always rent their wedding dresses. Nobody has space for that. That makes sense. Renting your wedding dress is a culturally normal thing.
I feel like renting clothes should just be like more of a thing, honestly.
Yes.
Like sharing, yeah, with your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a community instead of a community garden, or in addition to a community garden, they have like a community closet. I would love that.
That's so cute. Like those little, like, you know, those little like community libraries that are like on like corners and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome. I actually get so many hand-me-downs for my sister and it's the best. My partner's like, oh, you went shopping again. So I like have like an IKEA bag, my sister's clothes. I'm like, I did at Kelsey's.
No, I love those community initiatives. And like, if you don't start it, they might not happen, you know? So it's like maybe always awkward to start it in the beginning, but eventually people will probably jump on. Like I love free things or shared things.
Who doesn't?
No, exactly. So recommend.
I just have one thing I want to bring up. Not really that important. I just think it's the most hilarious. Like you laugh so you don't cry type situation. But did you guys ever see that tweet? I don't remember. It was like either Shell or ExxonMobil, or no, it was Shell. And they were like, what are you going to do today to reduce your environmental impact? And then it was like a Twitter poll or something. And then someone responded and was like, I pledge to not dump like a gajillion barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. And I was like, that is greenwashing, baby, at its finest.
Oh my gosh, we just had our documentary feature of the week. Literally all it talks about, without necessarily like saying greenwashing all the time, is greenwashing in corporations. Exactly what you said. You can dump barrels of oil in the ocean in an accidental spill because you wanted to save money on environmental assessment for your project or something. And then you come out with a commitment saying, we're going to go zero waste by 2030. And that's all you talk about. And then you're at Davos Lab and everyone's like, oh my God, wow, zero waste. We're so proud of you. It's like, okay.
It was worse than that because it was like, you know what? Here's this handy dandy tool to calculate your carbon footprint. So get on that, guys. And then we'll all be good.
All the examples were like so depressing. There was one that, did you guys read the one about the tissue box? Like Asian pulp and paper company Paizo released like a Kleenex box basically for kids. And it was like outlines of like animals on like forest animals. And then they could mindfully color and like think about these forest animals. And then people were like, you like burn down like 2 million hectares of forest and like where these endangered animals live, what is happening? Like, and at the same time, you're like, no, but save them.
It's always like, are you doing enough? It's like, are you doing enough?
pardon you.
Yeah.
So they always talk about how we have those nutrition facts on food products. You should have that nutrition label, environmental label, on all of your products, on clothes, on goods. You should be able to track and have that transparency, which I think, Jess, you mentioned earlier.
I feel like I just really like that concept. I feel like if that becomes a norm, then that really does just like give you a chance to like be in a grocery store and like compare two products and like, you know, like make the choice based on that.
Yeah.
And the thing about all of these things is that it's not like an abstract concept, you know, like these are very measurable outcomes, and any of these companies that have these claims can back up anything they're saying in data or not. And so like if that sort of thing was required, it would be so easy to tell. Sorry, my AirPods died. I just said like they're all measurable and it's not abstract and it's not vague and there is no gray area. Like it's very clear cut. If people were / corporations, whenever I say people, I usually mean corporations, were required to report it.
Well, corporations are technically thought of as people under regulation. So you're not incorrect. Like that's how corporations came into being or something. Like that's why they're so protected from like liability claims, is because they technically represent a person. They're held to the same standards. It's, watch the documentary.
That's also in The Shock Doctrine, I believe, just one of Naomi Klein's books. And yeah, just really highlights like how messed up this.
I think we gave some good strategies though for navigating it. And it's like, if you have the ability, you have the privilege, you have the platform, then you need to spread awareness and expect more from your governments. Demand more from your governments. Team, this was so great. Thank you for giving your personal experiences with greenwashing and also just helping navigate how to deal with this situation. We did a little bit of a shallow dive into a deep topic, but please let us know if you want us to continue this conversation. We love when you comment on our posts on Instagram, and you can give us suggestions for what you want to learn more about. You can listen to us anywhere that you listen to your podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into this week, and we will see you later.